The following show has paid WGCH a broadcasting fee, and the opinions expressed during the show are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WGCH Radio.
It is 9:02 on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino. This is Spotlight on Medicine. Topic this morning, pediatric oncology. Dr. Michelle Foley is my guest. Dr. Foley, a Yale Medicine pediatric oncologist, hematologist, sees patients at Yale New Haven Children's Hospital. Her clinical interests include caring for children and young adults with lymphoma and leukemias. Throughout fellowship, she participated in research of lymphoma and continues this work through the Yale School of Medicine, where she's an assistant professor of pediatric hematology and oncology at Yale School of Medicine. Dr. Foley went to University of New England College of Osteopathic Medicine, residency at Tufts New England Medical Center, go Jumbos, and fellowship at Pediatric Hematology Oncology Fellowship Program at Memorial Sloan Kettering and New York Presbyterian Hospital, Weill Cornell Medical Center. And Dr. Foley, thanks very much.
Thanks so much for having me.
You got a busy schedule. I'm glad you could carve out some time for us this morning. So we're talking about pediatric oncology, childhood cancer. What do we know about the risk or causes or factors of a childhood cancer?
Yeah, so unfortunately, childhood cancer is different than adult cancers in that we don't really know a lot about what causes it or what the risk factors are. There are a few very rare kind of genetic conditions that can be an underlying cause of disease, but for the most part, it's completely random, and we don't have a great understanding or a great handle on kind of why these things happen in kids.
It's heartbreaking. You see, kids, I mean, they in some cases don't even have a chance. I mean, it's just a bad draw, I guess, right?
Unfortunately, for most kids, it is, yes. Bad luck.
Any kind of genealogical type of thing or genetics or something like that that might be a tie-in?
Usually not. There are some kind of familial inherited conditions where cancer really runs in the family, but for the most part, it's just random mutations in cells that kind of cause the cancer.
What are the most common symptoms?
So the most common symptoms of kids are really going to be, you know, a lot of fatigue, very tired, not acting like themselves. They're pale, they have fevers, limp is a big symptom, and then kind of easy bruising, easy bleeding, all of those things together.
Mm-hmm. What are the most common cancers you see in children?
So the most common cancer that we see are leukemias and lymphomas, less solid tumors, and those leukemia lymphomas really present kind of in the way that I just mentioned.
Okay, and now is there any way of diagnosing them when they're, you know, in the uterus? I mean, before they're born?
No, usually not. You know, there are a few very, very rare cancers that will show up in infants, but typically they are kind of in kids around the 2 to 3 age and up, and there usually is nothing that we can identify earlier on.
Right. Getting back to the genetic part of it, what would you say to parents who might think it's their fault their child got diagnosed with cancer?
So I kind of always start off when I'm talking to parents of saying that there's nothing that any parent ever did to cause this problem. And, you know, I always reiterate to parents that they did everything right, and bringing their child to the doctor when they were nervous that something was wrong and bringing them to the emergency room and kind of ending up with us. I think that that's a really important thing to state because, you know, it's never anybody's fault for kids to have an oncologic disease and get cancer. And so I just always like to reiterate and reassure parents that that's the case.
I mean, is there an age when this kind of thing, for the most part, develops for children? Do you have some that are born with it, or at what age kind of thing?
So usually kind of the most common age, I would say, is around 3-4 years old for kind of your standard leukemias. Some solid tumors tend to be a little bit more in the adolescent population, so in the teenagers. Usually we don't see it in very small children. That is rare, although we can see it occasionally.
But really nothing you can point to?
Really nothing. The thing about childhood cancer is that, you know, kids are very good at hiding symptoms until they're all of a sudden not, and it comes on very, very quickly. Most of the time, it's a very acute presentation, so parents have noticed symptoms kind of in the last week or so. And so there's really no kind of markers that we can look at or, you know, things that we can identify earlier on to say what a child's risk of developing cancer would be.
We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Foley, talking pediatric oncology here on Spotlight on Medicine. How is cancer treatment in kids different than cancer treatment in adults? It is different?
So I think that it's different in the way that kids handle the treatment, to be totally honest. You know, it's the same kind of mainstays of treatment. So our tools are mostly chemotherapy medications, radiation, and surgery, the same as adults. But kids handle chemotherapy much better than adults do. You know, we have kids in our clinic who are going through kind of intense chemotherapy and radiation, and they're running around clinic playing with Barbies and acting like their usual selves, whereas adults tend to get much more fatigued and tired and nauseous and kind of all of those things. So it's the same medications, just different responses, I would say.
Yeah. Any reason why?
I think kids are just more resilient in general.
Or maybe they don't know what it's doing to them. It's like psychosomatic.
That too. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. You think so?
They just want to be kids.
They just want to be kids. I mean, you see the pictures of kids that are going through all of this. It is heartbreaking. What's it like for you to have to deal with children that are facing this diagnosis and treatment?
Yeah, it's definitely heartbreaking. I think overall, childhood cancer, we have very good kind of overall survival rates, better than a lot of adult cancers. And so I also always reiterate to parents, you know, if you have an older family member who's had cancer, this is not the same disease and it doesn't look the same in terms of treatment. And so the good days are always really good. There are bad days that, you know, we as providers have to deal with, but they're fewer and more far between than kind of adult oncology.
Mm-hmm. All right. We're going to take our first break of the morning on Spotlight of Medicine. My guest this morning is Dr. Michelle Foley. She's a Yale Medicine pediatric oncologist, hematologist, Yale New Haven Children's Hospital, Greenwich Hospital as well. And by the way, office at 500 West Putnam Avenue in Greenwich here, second floor. At the Yale New Haven Children's Hospital. WGCH News Center time is 9:10. We'll be back with more after this on Spotlight of Medicine.
Want an easy way to find a great doctor? Got a health issue you'd like to research? Looking for ways to be healthier and better informed about personal wellness? You'll find all this and more at the Greenwich Hospital website, www.greenhosp.org. This richly detailed website is loaded with valuable information. You'll find everything from directions and visiting hours to details about all the medical services and staff physicians, including doctor's credentials and office locations. You'll also find listings of community healthcare events, support groups, and much, much more. Whether you're planning a hospital visit or just want to be a more informed healthcare consumer, the place to start is Greenwich Hospital's website. Find it at www.greenhosp.org. That's www.greenhosp.org. Check it out today and get wise about health.
Coming up on 9/11 here on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino. It's the first Thursday of the month. That means it is Spotlight on Medicine. Folks from Greenwich Hospital, my guest is Dr. Michelle Foley. We're talking pediatric oncology. So, Dr. Foley, many parents wonder if their children can live a normal life after treatment. Can they?
They absolutely can. You know, with kind of our standard leukemia patients, the overall survival is above 90%. And so, you know, we really do have quite high survival rates and cure rates of this disease. And, you know, after that, obviously, getting chemotherapy at a young age, you do have side effects that need to be monitored kind of throughout your life. And and different things that can happen from the chemotherapy. But we usually follow up yearly with these kids and kind of do screening throughout their life, and they can go on to live completely normal, healthy lives. And I've, you know, seen kids become doctors and lawyers and kind of everything in between after beating their childhood cancer.
Absolute cure then, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and no return of cancer?
Usually not. You know, again, we kind of say over 90% overall survival. And so in that 10%, you do have the risk of relapse. But even with relapse leukemias, we now have a lot of really good treatments to kind of fight that as well.
Well, what are the most common questions parents ask you as their child goes through treatment? And then how do you respond?
I think, you know, it's at different stages of treatment, different questions come up. In the initial phase, obviously, the top thing on any parent's mind is my child going to make it through this? Because as soon as, you know, parents hear that word cancer, it's obviously a life-changing, life-altering diagnosis and thing, and life-altering for not just the child, but the parents and the whole family and the siblings as well. And so I think that, you know, we as a group kind of always like to say that, like I just said, we have good overall survival rates and we have good treatments for it. Cancer is obviously very serious, but, you know, we are always hoping for a cure and we always have kind of different treatments that we can fight this with.
Okay. Another question I guess, do I have to keep my child isolated from other children?
So that is definitely kind of one of the big questions that parents will always ask. You know, we worry, obviously, in these children getting chemotherapy that they're immunocompromised. But we also recognize that they're kids and they have to live their lives as kids for their mental health. And so I think what we kind of tend to say is, you know, good hand washing, masks, avoiding crowded places, but recognizing that they have to be around their siblings, they have to be around other kids. They can't spend the 3-4 years of treatment in a bubble.
Right, right. And now other kids, I mean, they're not going to think that cancer is, you know, communicable. Like that, they can catch it from another child that has it, right?
Right. That definitely is not the case. And so I always, you know, encourage parents to kind of do teaching with school teachers and with family friends and those types of things of, you know, making sure that their children are not sick around the child who has cancer, but the child who has cancer will definitely not pass anything on in mm-hmm. any way to other kids.
Now, how much information does the child have here? I remember growing up as a little kid, I'm watching this medical show where a kid had cancer and they parents didn't really say anything to him. So, of course, I'm a hypochondriac thinking, what do my parents know? What do I have? Blah, blah, blah. What's kind of the situation now? How informed are they along? And maybe it's an age type of question, but how informed are they?
Yeah, I think that it really does depend on the age. I am always of the mindset that kids know much more than we think that they do, and they pick up much more than we think that they do when we're kind of all talking in a room together. So I think that kind of sharing with your child the diagnosis in an age-appropriate way is always something that I encourage parents to do. And I think that we really pull in a lot of support staff to help the child go through this, kind of the main one being our child life specialists. So these are people who have masters in kind of helping children deal with difficult diagnoses, helping them deal with being in the hospital and getting procedures and getting medications. And they're really great at working with families to give information in an age-appropriate way about the diagnosis and kind of telling families and children, you know, what the next few years of treatment is going to look like and how to best let the child, you know, be involved in decision making depending on their age.
Mm-hmm. And I guess, I suppose that's not any different than an adult, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And even, you know, in a lot of our clinical trials and things like that we do, there's kind of a clause in there for anyone over the age of 12 that we have to talk to the patient and make sure that they assent as well and make sure that they are kind of on the same page as the parents. The parents are ultimately the ones who do the consenting process, but the child has to agree to.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I get back to the survival rate, because we were talking off air, I was surprised that because you see the kids on you know, the Danny Thomas commercials and things like that. Maybe they don't look like they're going to survive, but it's 95%. I mean, is that a development over recent years where the survival rate has gone up that much?
Yeah, so I think for childhood cancer, it's also a little bit different than adult cancer in that we have a lot of, because it's so rare, we have a lot of national consortiums that do clinical trials. And each clinical trial is really looking at how do we improve that survival rate. And so over, you know, the past 50 years in childhood cancer, there were really poor survival rates kind of 50 years ago. And through the work of these clinical trials and the national consortiums, both here and in Europe, we have really been able to improve the overall survival rate for kind of typical standard leukemias to greater than 90%, 95% in some cases. And I think that's the work, again, of kind of collaborating as a whole national group to make sure that, you know, we're using the right medications, we're using the right chemotherapy and the right combinations, and both improving overall survival while reducing toxicity as much as we can.
Do you think that these kids that go through this and survive, they wind up because of what they've gone through, lead healthier lifestyles than maybe the average kid? You know, there's an obesity epidemic, that kind of thing.
I'm not sure about that.
They're still going to have their candy bars and everything else, right?
Yeah. I think that overall, you know, this is a life-changing thing for a child to go through. And so they definitely are, I would say, more mature in some ways than other children their age, just by nature of having to kind of go through this hardship. But in terms of being healthier, I'm not entirely sure.
Not sure. But you know, you point to the resiliency of kids. That's the thing that maybe we adults don't understand enough, or maybe we don't remember how we were resilient as kids, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, until you kind of see a child going through chemotherapy, you don't even realize how resilient they are. And when you put, you know, a child going through chemotherapy versus an adult going through chemotherapy side by side, you can truly tell how much these kids just are really fighters in general, and they really kind of take whatever we throw at them and they mature out of it and become, you know, very resilient individuals.
All right, fantastic. We're speaking with Dr. Michelle Foley, and our topic this morning on Spotlight of Medicine is one I don't think we've ever had before, pediatric oncology, pediatric cancer, and childhood cancer. An interesting topic, and we'll come back with one more segment here in Spotlight of Medicine on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.
You make lots of important decisions for your family, but when it comes to healthcare, there's nothing more important than the doctors that you choose. So how do you make the right decision? Here's a tip. Check out the doctor's credentials and make sure they're from respected medical schools. And here's another tip. Look for a doctor who's affiliated with a truly fine hospital, like Greenwich Hospital. Greenwich Hospital is consistently rated in the top 1% nationwide for patient satisfaction. It has a broad array of specialties, from excellent women's services and breast care to pediatrics, orthopedics, extensive cancer care, and much more. Greenwich Hospital physicians meet the highest standards for healthcare excellence. For a referral to a Greenwich Hospital physician, call 203-863-3627. That's 203-863-3627. Greenwich Hospital, for the quality care you and your family deserve.
/921 here on 1490 WGCH, WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino. This is Spotlight on Medicine. Dr. Michelle Foley, my guest, pediatric oncology. She's at the Yale New Haven Children's Hospital Pediatric Specialty Center here in Greenwich at 500 West Putnam Avenue, formerly at Memorial Sloan Kettering, you're saying. And
yes.
That's where you served your internship and so forth?
Yes, that's where I did my fellowship training.
And I want to pick up on this because we were talking off air about how when I see children suffering and animals suffering, it just, you know, breaks my heart. And there's a tie-in for you, right?
Yes. When I was younger, I was choosing between becoming a doctor and becoming a veterinarian. And I ultimately went the doctor route because I wanted patients that could talk to me and tell me kind of what was wrong. But then I ended up in pediatrics, which sometimes our patients aren't always able to talk quite yet because they're little. So,
yeah, they don't understand what's happening to them.
Yes.
It's like
yeah.
an animal. Yeah. Okay. All right. So now, other than physical treatment, what practices are in place to treat the mental and emotional toll that cancer has on us? So we talked about the resiliency, but there is a toll.
There is absolutely a toll. And I think that, you know, at Yale, we have kind of a comprehensive team to treat that mental health aspect. So we have therapists, psychologists, psychiatrists, we have child life, social work, kind of a lot of other staff to help the patient with what is happening. You know, particularly, I think, in our adolescent population, because as we've talked about, you know, the younger kids may not always fully grasp what's going on, but the adolescents certainly do. And they're the ones that we see the most kind of, you know, struggling with things. I think that, you know, we really try and have adolescents utilize therapy and talking to someone about the struggles. And then child life, again, is really huge. We use our child life specialists every day to help explain things in an age-appropriate way about the procedures that patients are going to have to go through, the different medications that they're getting, why they're in the hospital, how long they're going to have to stay in the hospital. And without them, I think we truly would be lost.
Yeah, because, I mean, you think about it, for a kid who doesn't, you know, have any health challenges when they're growing up, they reach adolescence. And so, I mean, it's a challenging time anyway. So to go through this is not
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Adolescence in of itself is a whole other ballgame, I think, of, you know, hormones and maturity and all of those things. And then to add on a cancer diagnosis and, you know, tell an adolescent that they're going to have to go through chemotherapy and they're going to have to lose their hair and they're not going to be able to go to school for an amount of time definitely takes a toll. And so I think, you know, having those extra supports in place with child life specialists and therapists and all of that is really important for that population.
As with many things we talk about when it comes to health challenges, there's the patient, but there's also the parents, siblings, loved ones, resources available for them.
Yeah, so I think, you know, it's kind of in pediatrics, a lot of times we always say, yes, we're treating the patient, but we're also treating the parents because they're the ones, again, who really know more about what's going on and are more aware. And so we, I think, rely on kind of, again, that ancillary staff of social work and all of those people to help support the parents. I think in our clinics, a lot of times parents will find support in each other as well. So they'll start talking to, you know, the parents of the child next to them. And I know there's a lot of relationships that kind of develop between parents and, you know, exchanging of phone numbers and talking offline and kind of all of that to help support each other through this process.
Hmm. And maybe think of something that just popped into my head. What about between kids?
Yeah, kids definitely develop friendships because, you know, they're kind of inpatient in the hospital for a week at a time and they, you know, see the same people kind of coming in and out, the same kids kind of in the hallways. And I think they definitely rely on each other and end up developing friendships kind of throughout this process.
How long does this kind of support go on?
So it goes on indefinitely. You know, after treatment is done, these kids are still our patients and they're kind of our patients for life. We have a survivorship clinic where we see these children once a year and we kind of check in. We check in about their mental health. We check in about their physical health. We check in about any kind of side effects from chemotherapy. And that really carries on pretty indefinitely.
Really? Yeah.
Into adulthood.
I can imagine. All right. So what resources are available in Greenwich or through Yale New Haven Children's Hospital if a parent or guardian is concerned about their child?
Yeah. So I would say the first step is, you know, to talk to your pediatrician about your concerns, and then they can always send a referral to us. I was mentioning off air, we see, you know, both oncology in Greenwich. We also see hematology, which, again, is kind of more iron deficiency anemias and things like that, which are a bit more common than oncology processes. But, you know, talking to your pediatrician and then having them refer, and we can see you in the office and kind of address any concerns that you may have.
And what would you say to parents? I mean, to not have them be, for lack of a better term, paranoid about their child's health, but to keep an ear and eye out for symptoms.
Yeah, great question. I think I will kind of preface that by saying childhood cancer is extremely rare. It's not a very common thing at all. You know, I kind of do it day in and day out, so it's common to me, but it's not common to the general population. And really, just as a parent, trust your gut. Most of the time, you have that kind of internal, something isn't right, something feels off, and advocating for your child kind of in those scenarios and going to the pediatrician and saying, I just don't think something is right. But it's hard because a lot of these types of processes present the same way as, you know, a common cold. They're just not feeling great. They have fevers. But if it starts to kind of persist and go on for longer, taking your child back to the pediatrician and making sure that everything is okay.
Now, from a cellular level, are these cancers the same as adult cancers?
Yes and no. They're the same types of cells that are becoming abnormal in leukemias, but for different reasons a lot of the time. So different kind of what we call molecular reasons and different mutations that happen in the cells themselves to transform them into cancer cells.
How'd you get involved with this field?
So in medical school, I always knew that I wanted to do pediatrics. I really was drawn to kind of treating children. And then throughout residency, I did some rotations on hematology oncology. And I found that the relationship that you develop with families is such a profound and lasting one. And it's kind of you're treating, yes, the cancer, but the whole patient and the whole family. And that really is what drew me to the field.
And how can people get in touch with you, Dr. Foley?
So you can just send a referral in through kind of the Yale system to hematology oncology. And like I said, I see patients in Greenwich 3 days a week, and then I see patients in New Haven once a week.
And you live in Riverside, so it's not a bad commute.
Yes, it's a very easy commute to the Greenwich office. The New Haven one's a little bit further.
A little bit tough. All right. Well, appreciate your time, Dr. Foley. And how many other staff are there with you?
So we have a lot of different attendings, I would say somewhere around 15 of us, and we kind of all specialize in different types of cancer.
All right, fantastic. Appreciate your time this morning on Spotlight on Medicine. My guest has been Dr. Michelle Foley, pediatric oncology.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
I know. Happy holidays. Thank you so much.
All right, take care. All right, that's another edition of Spotlight on Medicine here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere. I'm Tony Savino. Next show will be Thursday, January 2nd. In the new year. Stay tuned. We've got Matt Ray, America's News First, Sportsline America at 10, Debbie Nigro at 11 on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com anywhere.